Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and this week we are continuing our Death Scribe 10 coverage, the 10th annual Festival of Radio Horror Plays, to be held in Chicago, Monday, December 4th at Lincoln Hall. You can find out details at wildclawtheater.com. That's theater spelled the classical way, T-R-E. You can also follow the links there to Brown Paper Tickets to get tickets to that event. And we're right now just going to jump right on in to the interviews because we have three more good ones for you to close out our coverage, including a lovely conversation with Wild Claw Artistic Director Josh Zagorin. So here we go. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and continuing with our Death Scribe coverage, I've got writer Bill Daniel here, one of the finalists for this year's competition, and his short radio play is called Cavities. Welcome, Bill.
Hi there. It's nice to be on.
Now, I can guess what Cavities is about. Is it? Will it remind people of Marathon Man at all?
Oh, you know, it just might. That is a horrifying scene that I did not think about until just now.
How can you actually go into teeth involvement and not think of Marathon Man? Seriously. I mean, that movie's not horror, but still, that's a horrific scene.
You know, I only have three words for you. Is it safe?
Well played. Well played, sir. So, is this your first time doing Death Scribe, or are you an old hat at this?
No, this is actually the first time that I have had a piece accepted. This is the second attempt that I have made to get into Death Scribe. Last year, it was all very new to me, the concept of writing a radio play, so I was going in kind of blind, not sure what I was going to do. But after having seen the Death Scribe and listening to all of the pieces, and I got a better understanding of what I should be doing in order to get a piece actually in the show. So I was very fortunate to get this one in. So this is the second try, first successful one.
Wow, congratulations then. It's always a tough fight to get into the top five. So that means that you have something deliciously terrifying or horrifying for our fans this year. What, without going into any spoiler territory, what's it about?
It is about how horrific it could be to visit the dentist when something is in your mouth that you didn't think was there 10 minutes ago. I think that's pretty safe as far as not spoiling the play too much.
Right. So was this inspired by something in particular, or did you see something or hear something that went, ooh, ow, yeah, I got to write that out?
I have actually, unfortunately, had a significant amount of tooth trauma. And, like, it's always one of those things that, like, freaks me out when it's in a movie. So something like Marathon Man, the idea of having every single tooth drilled in just for the pleasure of it is horrifying. But going through having braces and having braces for so long and having like scheduled visits to the dentist like 5 or 6 times a year, and just, yeah, the idea of having tooth fragments getting pulled or just having a tooth pulled in general was all very horrifying. So I knew exactly where my trauma and my fear was coming from, and I knew it was a universal enough horror that I think other people could closely relate to tooth trauma or general anxiety of dentists.
Nicely done. So are you a big fan of horror? How did you come across the Death Scribe competition to be your writing inspiration?
I mean, I have all, like, as a kid even, I was watching scary movies that were definitely not the kind of films that I should have been watching as a young child. Being introduced to very, like, schlocky, like, 80s gore films as a 5 or 6-year-old was probably not how my folks intended me to grow up, but it certainly shaped my little brain. and has only made me hunger for more, like, horrifying things in any genre. So the idea for writing for radio was something I never really thought about until I went and saw the Death Scribe 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, that would be really cool to do that, but I don't really know how to approach this. And then trying to do it last year was a lot of fun, still very much a learning experience. And then seeing that one last year especially, I was like, oh, man, this is like right up my alley. So, you know, just kept trying, and I was lucky to get into it this time. But horror in general is just something that I have always clung to and find it especially fascinating.
Do you have a favorite subtype of horror, like monsters, body horror, hauntings, that kind of thing?
I do. As much as I hate it happening in real life, the concept of, like, disgusting specific body horrors are, it's a sick genre, but, like, it's, I guess it's just one of those schadenfreude kind of things. It's like, oh, it's happening to them and not me. But, like, I could still, like, anytime someone needs to, like, pull a tooth or something sharp goes near someone's eyeball, I lose my mind in all the good way.
Are you a playwright by trade, or do you write in different mediums?
I am typically a playwright by trade, and occasionally I am an actor. Went to school for acting and didn't realize I had a taste for playwriting until pretty late into college, and it is the one thing that I have had more success in since moving to Chicago. So I'm typically a playwright. Yeah, I haven't really dabbled in many other mediums. It's the one that I have explored the most.
Do you find that your acting helped inform your writing?
Oh, 100%. As an actor, I write the things that I know would be fun to do. So I guess the acting does inform sort of the choices I make as a playwright, because I'm writing knowing the actors specifically have to do these things. So I guess it becomes more practical.
What is something that you would love to write, a story that is your dream story to write?
A dream story that I would love to write is unfortunately something I've already written, and it's just a matter of when and not if. I to cross two genres that I really love is the horror genre with the Western or the cowboy genre, and like mission accomplished. I already wrote that, and it's something that I'm like super passionate about, and it's just a matter of finding a venue that's crazy enough to take a risk on it. Love cowboys, love horror, and marrying the two together was like peanut butter and chocolate. It was meant to be.
Wow, so you have a full-blown Western horror stage play.
I do.
How can that not have been wanting to get in production by anyone? Because that just sounds like fun.
Oh, I mean, everyone that I have shown it to or read it with has always been like, yeah, so when are we doing this? And it's a question of funds, mm-hmm. and people, again, being crazy enough to want to put that kind of stuff up. But I think people would really like it if it's up.
If it takes too long to put on stage, would you consider adapting it to something like a graphic novel or a web series?
Oh, I always think about that, especially with my writing. It's too crazy of an idea. It's like, oh, this would work really great in this medium, and I think it would be amazing as a graphic novel. I even think it'd be kind of fun to do as a radio play. Get a cast of actors and read it and have someone make sound effects. It would certainly be cheaper to do. I think it would still be a lot of fun.
Cool. So what are you looking forward to most for this year's Death Scribe?
I'm looking forward to hearing the other people's pieces. I'm super excited to see what I'm lucky enough to be in competition with. I just think it's great. I'm super excited to even be a part of the process. And I'm eager to know what everyone else has done. I'm just excited to share it with everyone.
Well, I myself can't wait to hear the recordings of all five performances. We have all been just marveling at the whims of circumstance in the universe that put writer Travis Williams and director Sarah Sevigny back together again, because Sarah is the three-time winner as for director.
I know that, yes.
And Travis is, you know, back to back. I'm like, you're kidding me. How did those two get together again? That's like King Kong and Godzilla in the same monster.
It's going to be some stiff competition.
Cool. Well, I think it'll still be a lot of fun. Are you going to be, you're in town, you're local to Chicago, so you will be there for the performances?
I will, yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I wish you luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Bill Daniel. He's written Cavities, which will be directed by Three Sahoditz, who unfortunately we couldn't get on to chat with her, but because she's busy. She's very, very good at what she does and is therefore super busy.
She is. She's amazingly talented. I can't believe how lucky I am to have her in charge of display. Like, it's going to be amazing.
Like I said, I'm looking forward to when Wild Claw puts the recordings of all the performances out so I can just savor, sit back in my chair, close my eyes, and listen and, you know, just be grossed out because teeth comes after Bugs for me, but Bugs is really high on the list. And yeah, Bugs, clowns, and teeth. Not just no.
Oh, man. The unholy trinity.
Congratulations for making it to the finals and good luck.
Thank you.
Death Scribe 10 happening this year, Monday, December 4th. In Chicago at Lincoln Hall. Tickets are still available, so go get them now before you have to wait in line outside in the cold for the waiting list.
Definitely.
Excellent. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now is another member of the Death Scribe 10 finalist category. We have writer Scott Barsotti, who has written the short radio play Beckon, which will be directed by Charlotte Drover, who unfortunately could not join us right now. But Scott is actually Wild Claw royalty. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, they, I was a member of Wild Claw for 6 years, from 2009 through 2015, this is my first time working with the company since leaving the company. So I'm glad they're happy to have me back.
Josh had nothing but good things to say about you.
Well, yeah, he has to say that because they want to. Josh and I actually we go way back. We've been friends since before he joined the company, and it's been a long road for me and Josh.
That's good. Cool. Yeah. Did you perform in any of the previous Death Scribes?
I've performed a couple of times. And usually in some of the like interstitial pieces that we'll do, like the recorded ads and things like that we'll do. And I've been in one of the plays previously. Wildfoot did a play of mine called The Skinny Man in the 2009 Death Scribe, which then became kind of a staple of like when we would show what Death Scribe was at different events and things like that. That became kind of a go-to piece. You know, it was kind of a piece that we had in the can that we could kind of take anywhere and just kind of put up pretty quickly with any cast. And Ellie Maidlin, our great Foley designer, I know that's a piece that she got very comfortable performing. And so that's one that that actually got a little bit of mileage after it was originally done.
Cool.
In Death Scribe. And I'm not even sure at this point how many times it's been done. It's had a nice long life with Wild Claw.
Well, it's good that it's such a favorite that they keep performing it over and over again, because that means it was very appealing stuff.
Yeah.
So without going into any spoiler territory, tell us what Beckon is about.
So Beckon, sort of the main story of Beckon is that it's about a sound engineer who is kind of subjecting himself to audio torture, in a sense, because he believes that low frequency sound, infrasound, is a way to communicate with ghosts, and that's something that he's kind of attempting to do, and it's kind of driven him to the point of obsession, and that's just something that's we're kind of coming in the middle of that with the piece, where he's already been at it for a few months, and it's kind of affecting his sanity and affecting his physical well-being. And so yeah, we're coming into that, and then some of the other characters. We're actually the story is mainly told by his wife and daughter, who are observing sort of the. Observing the torture that he's putting himself through, and then also the changes that it's having, while also having their own conversation about ghosts.
Hauntings. That seems to be a favorite topic for this season, really, actually.
Well, that's, hauntings is something that definitely lends itself to a radio show, because so much of ghost stories is in sound and, sort of where a sound is originating from, or a sound that's out of place. And so I think that's something that we tend to have at least one or two ghost stories, I think, in every desk drive.
What's your opinion on the existence and presence of otherworldly spirits?
Oh, I absolutely believe that they exist. I guess I kind of think about it in terms of, I think that places, whether it's architecture or a natural place or whatever, I think that people leave energy behind. So whether or not it's like you see in movies where like a ghost has a will and a consciousness, and they can act as the person would have acted when they were alive or something like that. I don't know that I go that far, but I do think that people leave something behind, and that there's a lot of energy that kind of resonates from within structures and places, and that the effect of that can be felt.
Yeah, I read somewhere once that certain structures actually have their own memories, where something that happened within that structure, that cave, that ancient monument, those old ruins, actually has a residual feel that some people can sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely buy that. And I think that there's something to the idea that, maybe that there's some people who sort of pick up on that a little bit more sensitively than other people do.
Yeah, it's the same as someone being able to spot the seams on a fastball or not, right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just different kinds of sights.
Yeah, so what kind of stories, horror stories, are your favorite? Is horror like your favorite genre, or just like tied for second, or...?
No, it's definitely my favorite. So the majority of the writing that I do is in the genre. It's a lot of what I consume media-wise, at least has some kind of horror element. In terms of, like, specific types of horror, I'm not squeamish about violence, but I definitely enjoy horror that is more on the psychological side, where it's more about kind of the horror and human nature and the nature of fear and the things like and things like that. That said, one of my favorite genres is body horror. It's just the whole idea of being presented with the idea that the you know, your body can betray you, your body can fall apart, your body can change quickly and violently and due to things that are outside of your control. I mean, The Fly, I think, is one of my favorite horror sci-fi movies ever made, and it sort of encapsulates a lot of that. So, but yeah, definitely horror of the mind is something that I come back to over and over, but I also love zombies.
So. who doesn't love zombies? So with The Fly, which one do you like better, the Jeff Goldblum one or the original?
The Jeff Goldblum one, for sure. But I'm also a fan of Cronenberg. So, I mean, that one, there's a lot going on in that film that I love. And I actually haven't seen it in a few years. So it just makes me want to go back and watch it.
Excellent, excellent. So where else do you write? Do you strictly stick with playwriting, or do you do novels, graphic novels?
So I do have a novel published. It's a sci-fi horror novel called Single Version, which is it's published through Inkshares, which is an online publisher, and, mm-hmm. And it's on Amazon as well. But that's my like one departure from playwriting, because for the most part I have done playwriting and just a little bit of screenwriting, but I've definitely done the vast majority of my work has been for stage, and then sort of focusing on what does it mean to write horror for the stage, and if you're trying to put horror in front of a live audience, what are the constraints? How do you subvert expectations? How do you do things a little bit differently than somebody might try to do on film, you know, where you have editing and things like that. So it's an interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, what other projects do you have in the works? Because like I said, Beckon is just a 10-minute performance, mm-hmm. give or take, coming up at Deathscribe beginning of December. So you've got to have some other things to keep you busy once this year's performance is done.
Yeah, well, the things that are keeping me busy right now are I have two little kids at home, and then I have a third that's due in January. So, like, right after Deathscribe, my wife is turning around and having another addition to the family. So that definitely has taken up a lot of my mental energy in the last year or so. But I'm breaking ground on a couple new plays, and then also I've been conspiring with my brother to co-write a science fiction novel that would have a lot to do with AI, but we're still kind of developing the world of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a second novel kind of very, very, very early in the works, and then some other play ideas that are kind of being kicked around, writing a little bit here and there when I can manage to stay awake at night. But yeah, definitely the developments in my family have been sort of the main thing keeping me busy over the last year.
So I wish you good luck with the Deathscribe competition.
Thank you very much.
All right. Deathscribe, once again, Monday, December 4th at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. If you're in town, go check it out. Tickets are still available. And from what I've heard from the recordings from previous Deathscribes, it is a hoot and a treat. Thank you.
I used to say it was my favorite night of the year.
Yeah, I mean, horror in December, you really can't go wrong with that, because you've got excellent choices for the regular run-of-the-mill Christmas preparation, and then you have horror radio plays. I'm going with the different right now.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Summer.
That's Scott Barsotti, writer of the radio short Beckon, which will be performed at Deathscribe. And we will be right back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, and welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi and our never-ending coverage of Deathscribe. I think it's delicious. You should, too. And with me now is one of the instigators of this fabulous institution, Josh Zagorin, the artistic director for Wildcloth Theater Group. Thank you for this holiday treat every year, Josh.
Oh, it's a treat indeed. That's true. Thank you for having me.
So what did you have to do any different preparations for this year's competition, or is it the same? We have 2 million submissions. We have to whittle it down to 25.
Right.
And then whittle it back down again to five.
Five. Oh, well, so that part's the same. We had about 136
wow.
submissions this year, which is the largest we've ever had. From all over the world, we ended up, our finals usually are, we get like 18 final picks from the first read crew. This year it had to be 26 because there were so many good ones. And then this year's culling, which is what we call it when we all, the company gets together and argues until we get to the final five, was heated, but all good. It was very passionate. There was a lot of good fights to get their favorites in the mix because we can only do five. And so going from 18 to five is tough. Going from 26 to five is dramatic. So it was really great to have. It's good when you have a good fight, like when it's over and you're like, yeah, we accomplished something. So this year it was everybody came packing with their favorite five. And argued it until we got our faves. So rest assured, this is the best of the best of the best this year.
Wow.
Damn sure. Which is awesome because this is our 10th year doing it. So that's even better.
And you have a milestone year. I'm confident that you'll have a milestone lineup. The fact that, that Travis Williams and Sarah Sevigny ended up on a team together again is just, that's the universe just saying, no, I'm putting my thumb on the scale here right now.
Yeah, that's a very Lovecraftian thing to have them just find each other in the dark there. And it infuriated us and at the same time scared us a lot. We were like, no, we can't have them again. They're gonna go for it. We can't keep this dynasty must fall.
Well,
but I guess we can't stop the fates.
Yeah, I mean the fates intervened because you set up the rules. The winning director gets first pick, and she went, "Ooh, my lovely, my precious is right here." Oh wow, Travis wrote it. Cool.
Oh yeah, no, it just was meant to be, and we all just kind of had to sit and take it and just hope that everybody brings the strongest game they have because it's, I mean. They are the gladiator champions. So let's see what happens. That's all I have to say. May the best fiend win.
Cool.
I think is what we've been saying to everybody.
Now, since you guys keep getting more and more submissions and the fight to narrow it down to five has gotten so much tougher, has there ever been any talk of expanding it to 8 or 10?
Well, this year we are doing something a little different. Now, this isn't the same, and I'll get to why I'm explaining this. Because the problem isn't doing more of them. It's how long do you want to sit and watch a show?
Right. Okay.
Because I think doing five, 10 minutes, and they usually run about 10 to 15, so that's already a good hour, and at best, right? So in between those, you've got commercials and music, and the event runs about 2.5 without with a 15-minute intermission there, so 2:15 worth of material. And if you go even longer than that, you're looking at 3 hours, and as lovely as it would be to do that, I just don't think, it's going to be nearly as entertaining. And plus, getting it down to the five, that's tough. You really have to bring the game. So what are you doing? You're instead of giving more chances, you're making the chances tougher. So you're really getting the best that you can get. But we definitely had 26 potentials this year that we felt would be wonderful to have regardless. But what we do over at Wild Claw is if we don't choose you for the final five, if you make it into the finals, we keep you in our archives. And if we have salons that we do or tours that we do of shows that we get asked to do in various cities across the country, we'll pick something from the vaults. And so, you know, it's not that you're not getting into the club. It's that, well, we'll keep you for something else. So I think that the opportunities are still there while keeping Death Scribe a tight 215. But the reason I tell you that we're doing something a little different is because instead of doing five pieces this year, we're doing six pieces, five in competition, one out of competition. And it sounds like something we're, if it works out like we hope, we'll be doing for a while now, from now on, because we found that in the past, the judges didn't know what they were getting. And so the first piece always gets kind of overlooked because it's their first introduction to the concept of Death Scribe. Even though we send everybody the archives, nobody ever reads their emails. So what we're going to do this year is a piece by our Foley designer, Ellie Maitland, starring all Wild Claw Company members. So we're going to open the show with that piece to kind of give you the, okay, this is what you're going up against, so the judges have a better idea. Plus, we get to do a piece just as a company, which we don't normally get to do for Death Scribe. And Ellie had entered it into the competition under a pseudonym, and it got into the final 26, and then she had to tell us, well, hey, that was me. I just wanted to see what it would do. And we were all super bummed because we really liked it, so we're going to do it anyway. But we realized that actually might help out the competition because now the judges know what they're getting without having to consider that one part of the contest. So you're going to get a little bit of a longer show, but we're still working on keeping it 215. We'll see.
So you're having like an opening act or a horror amuse-bouche.
Yeah, it's a tasty little endive. So we'll see how we do.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm in it too, and we just had a couple of rehearsals, and it's nice to be on that end of the competition, to be in a piece again, because I haven't been in one since I first joined up with them back in 2013, I think. Because that's how I met everybody, was I got asked to do a Death Scribe piece. And it was a fun one. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was about a bunch of people who were possessed. And we had to do two different voices for each character. And that was the last time I got to do a Death Scribe piece. So this is kind of exciting for me this year.
Excellent. I'm glad you get to jump back into the pool that mm-hmm. led you here, basically.
Oh, yes. It's also really relaxing because not just hosting, but I'm also, you know, fest master. So I'm kind of wrangling all the cats, as it were. And to not have to do that and just kind of sit back and just read the part is luxurious, I'll say. It's like a little spa. I'm like, I don't have to do much. Yeah, no, I don't have to answer that question. What comes next? That's for the director. So it's been nice. And that's going to be directed by Noreen McGrath, who's one of our company members. And it's starring myself, Krista D'Agostino, who's our marketing director, Mandy Walsh, who's our casting director, Chris Walsh, who's our literary manager, whom I know you've spoken to once or twice, and Sarah Espinoza, who is our sound designer and never gets to perform. So she's going to be in this one as well.
I think I talked to Christina about Night in Alachua County.
That's true. You did, because she was the star. Mm-hmm. Well, star in an ensemble of stars.
Yes.
So, yeah. Main cool. character.
Main lead. Lead.
POV. Main.
Yes. Lead. POV. POV Better lead. Word. There you go.
POV lead.
Now, how have the rehearsals and preparations for this year's show gone?
Oof. Great. But as always, we're definitely feeling it. around now because they're starting to tighten up. Now, normally we tell the directors, you know, 3 to 5 rehearsals are really all you need because it's actors with scripts in hand and we're doing it radio style, so you don't want to throw your back out. But you've also got Ellie Maitland's Foley, and that's a lot of choreography. So what sounds like it should be pretty simple is actually not that simple. And we like to bring in directors that have never done it before. So it's always interesting to see what it's like when you get 5 mini productions all trying to schedule around their own lives. And it kind of always comes down to there's like a week where there's a rehearsal every night for a different piece. So we're in that, we're in the thick, as it were. But it's great. Everybody's been having a good time. They're all really excited. All the pieces are really different this year and strange. And we're doing some new stuff. Some, we're playing with some new concepts. A lot more music than last year, which I'm very excited about. There's a couple of pieces that have songs in them. We have 4 songs that we're going to actually perform. So there's a lot more that we get to do with the band this year. Which excites me because I'm a big music buff, and so having more music in a horror show, I think, is always a nice experiment to see how it goes. But the pieces that I've heard and the music that I've heard, it's haunting and funny and dark and just everything that makes Deathscribe what it is. So you're going to get the most concentrated dose of Deathscribe we've ever done this year, for sure.
Nice. So this year you guys are at Lincoln Hall again, and this is a bigger venue than you had been at, I guess, 2014 and earlier.
It's about the same size. It's just it's in a different location, and it's more of a centralized location. So I guess maybe it seems a bit bigger. We were at Main Stage 2 years ago, and we were there for 4 years. And then they had to change their management, and we kind of lost a lot of the amenities that we normally get to use because they've closed their restaurant. And they changed into more of an event venue rather than a concert venue, and so we decided to move, which was really kind of rough because that place was always so great. But then we moved to Lincoln Hall, which has about the same setup, but it's a little closer to. The metro area, so it's more centrally located for our audience, which makes them happy, which I assume means more people. So last year, for sure, we had we sell out every year, but this it sold out a little bit more just because of seating and the way we changed it. So yes and no, but I think that just makes it more exciting because it's a different venue, but it's also got the same flavor that we had from the previous venue, but it's just a little easier to get to.
Cool. And right for the moment, tickets are still available for people who want to come check out the show.
And you got to get them quick because was it 2 years ago? We sold out a week ahead of time. Last year we had a wait list the day before. So now would be the time. We have a different seating structure this year. So just check out the brown paper tickets link and see where you kind of feel like you want to be, because all the seating is good. It just depends on what you're in the mood to do. The cheaper seats are towards the front of the stage and also towards the bar on the balcony in the back. Either way, you're going to be able to hear and see the show just fine. It just depends on what you're feeling, but those are standing room. So if you want a seat, you're going to have to go a little bit higher up on the pricing scale, but it's not too bad. Tickets are 25 to 40. And again, that's, 2.5 hours with booze and food. I think you could do worse. but they sell out quick. So if you're listening and you're down and you're in the area or you're thinking of coming to the area, go to our website and grab your tickets now before everybody else does.
Yes, and that is Wild Claw Theater Group or wildclawtheater.com.
Yes. In the traditional sense.
Yes, and the links there. There's a special section for Deathscribe. I highly recommend everyone check it out, especially the recordings of the previous finalists. For me, Earwigs from 2015 is still...
That was the beginning of the reign of Savini.
Oh, my...
No, what... Yes.
Yes, it was. Wait, no, it was. Yes, it was.
It was the beginning.
It was the beginning. It was the beginning. That... Oh, my goodness. That one still haunts my memory as one of the most... short audios I've ever heard. And
it's
just, wow.
Upsetting.
Yes. You know that moment where you go, oh my.
Yeah.
Still does that. Just thinking about it still does that. So I highly recommend everyone go listen to that and share that feeling with me.
I was going to say, isn't it great that whenever we talk about this stuff, you're like, oh, there was this one thing that made me want to die. You should listen to it. It's great.
Yeah, it is.
That's the goal.
Yeah. Because you have to understand good horror. And so I point people in the direction of good horror because there's too much 20 years of crappy horror. So I'm pointing people towards good horror in the hopes that this will elevate everyone's sense of taste for good horror. And maybe that will improve the quality of horror creatives that come our way. So that's, I'm trying to improve the world by giving us better horror. How's that?
I'll take it. pretty much where we're at as well. We've seen some good stuff this year. I've been on some cool lists to check out some of the new stuff that's rolling around. I think Netflix is a good spot for new good stuff because they really care about their artists, aren't really a studio heavy with trying to make money. Everybody's trying to make money, sure, but they have a little more connection with the fan base. So been rolling around on Netflix looking at some nice horror that isn't necessarily American. That doesn't mean that we don't know how to do good horror. I'm just saying I've seen some pretty cool stuff from other countries recently. And it's the words getting out. I think Jordan Peele helped out a lot with Get Out and kind of how he brought the concept of social commentary back into the scene. And you know, it was a blast. I don't know if it was necessarily scary, but I don't necessarily think horror needs to be scary. I think if you can't really tell what scares who, there's too many varying opinions. I think if the aim is truth and the aim is dread, then you're going to get a good horror movie. I liked it. I thought it was a blast, but, No, I'm trying to think. Gerald's Game on Netflix was really good and really scary.
I heard about that one, yeah.
Solid movie. Oh, Clown. Okay, go with me on this, Summer. Go with me on this. So Eli Roth produced this. Just, again, go with me on this.
Okay.
Eli Roth produced this movie called Clown about a man who, the clown for his kid's birthday party, cancels, so he decides to dress up like a clown, and then he falls asleep in the costume and can't get it off the next day, and it becomes like a Cronenberg body horror nightmare that's really funny but also truly disturbing, and by the end it's straight up horror.
Okay, yeah, I heard about this one.
It was great. I loved it. Good time.
Since you are recommending it, when I have a chance to see it, I will, because I have a thing. I do not like clowns. I do not like clowns.
Oh.
Ever since I was little, the clowns at Ringling Brothers frightened me. And then watching Poltergeist in high school, that sort of sealed the deal. I'm like, no, we're done with clowns. Not going there.
Yeah, no. I do a podcast out of Chicago, and we went to go see it and then had a nice discussion in the car because none of us wanted to drive home about what are the scariest clowns in horror history. And the winner across the board is the clown from Poltergeist.
Yep.
100%. So, you know, go see this terrifying clown movie and tell me how you fare. you can't beat it, man. Clowns are terrifying. There's no discussion.
Yep. Okay. I will see Clown, and I will share my dread with you, so that can be a shared experience, a cathartic shared experience. I'm with
there
you.
There are no clown pieces this year for Death Trap. So if any of you out there suffer from the phobia, you're okay. I promise. We'll find other ways to frighten you.
Yeah, this year seems to be mostly monsters, which I like because I'm a huge monster movie fan, so that's cool.
But yeah, monsters and weird sounds, and we get some good doctor medical horror in there.
Ooh.
And yeah, we have one about teeth that really freaks me out.
Yeah, marathon man.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, it's kind of right in that zone. We have one about hearing aids, which is interesting. Dan Finnan, who I believe you spoke to.
Yes, I did.
Wrote with that with Sarah Geis. And then we've got some standard fare that, when I say standard, I don't mean it's easygoing. I mean, it's something that you should have come to expect from us. So I'm excited. I mean, every year is very exciting. Every year is always different flavors. Every year is always different monsters, and we learn what makes everyone nervous. This year, it's just savage, and I think it's definitely reflective of the time we're living in, where everybody's already their anxiety's through the roof. So we're really seeing some truly upsetting stuff this year. But it's still fun. It's not to the point where you're. It's going to ruin your evening. It's still got that fun flair where you're still going to laugh at how scared you are. So that, you know, that's Death Grad.
Cool. Now, did you also get a lot more international submissions than you had in the past?
Oh yeah. I think it was, I want to say conservatively 40% international this year.
Wow.
And strangely enough, most of the pieces were written by local authors, but I think that's because a lot of them came to the show. I'm sorry, most of the five finalists are mostly local. But again, I think that's just because if you've seen the show, you get the vibe of the show. It makes it a little easier for us to want to use your piece in Death Scribe proper. But out of the 26 finalists, I would say I would do any of those pieces again.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think. I know we've had some from New Zealand that was really cool. We had one from Australia that was really cool. We had one from Zimbabwe that was pretty cool. Yeah, just across the board. Some London. One from France. I think – I can't remember all the countries, but it was a nice map of terror, which I thought was pretty cool.
I'm going to have to use that map of terror. Okay, where you got? There we go. I'm borrowing that.
Locked and loaded. Take it for free.
Cool. Well, Josh, thank you for sharing your love and enthusiasm of horror and of Death Scribe itself with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, as always.
Again, Death Scribe 10, Death Scribe X, coming to you Monday, December 4th at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. Go to the website, wildclawtheater.com, to get your tickets soon, or else you'll be standing out in the very cold, hopefully waiting for a slot on that wait list to open up. thank you, Josh, and I can't wait to listen to the performances of this year's finalists.
I can't wait for you to hear them.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And that will close out our coverage of Death Scribe for 2017. I'll be back with a report on the winning short once the competition is finished, which we should have in time for next week's show. So stay tuned for that. And I'll definitely keep everyone posted on when they have the podcast, the actual recordings of the five finalist performances up on the Wild Claw Theater website for everyone to enjoy. I know I'm looking forward to listening to those. But for now, we'll just settle in for the remainder of the winter holiday season. Looking at interviews for the winter shows, the upcoming shows, I definitely want to get some of the folks from Superstition on. Looking at looking towards season two of Beyond on Freeform. And there's a lot more good stuff coming up for The Gifted that I cannot, just so excited to see. So stay tuned for that as well. And, of course, more coverage in January and February of any interesting mid-season replacements that are coming along. I have to do a little bit more research before I weigh in on my opinions on that, but stay tuned. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on a show to keep an eye out for, be it a Netflix, a Hulu original, something new coming up on one of the streaming outlets that are out there, or something obscure in the graphic novel or web series world, let me know. The number to call is 602-635-6976, or you can send an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Both methods will get a message to me, and we'll chat about it. You can also listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn, and on Krypton Radio. You can also find the show on Player FM for those of you who have Android devices and you just want to browse. Check it out over there. If you're listening on iTunes or on Stitcher, please leave us a review. Every review and commentary on the show, reviews and ratings on the show on iTunes and on Stitcher do help. So if you're enjoying the show, let other people know and let them know maybe they should check it out for themselves. Look us up on Twitter. We're at Slice of Sci-Fi. Look us up on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. Noah and Darren's review of Pixar's newest one, Coco, has gotten a lot of views, a lot more than I'm used to seeing, and I'm very, very happy about that. So go check out their review, either on the website or over on YouTube. The website, of course, is sliceofscifi.com. We also have writersafterdark.com and popculturegeeks.com. If you are a media geek, a consumer of television, movies, comic books, let me know if you're interested in writing your views out for other people to read or discussing a particular, say, I don't know, movie or comic book that you have an opinion of. I'm a fan of the roundtable discussions, and the more the merrier. So send in a comment. Let me know. I'd like to thank everyone who's supporting the show through Patreon. Those donations do help keep things running around here. So if you want to add your name to the pledges, you can go to Patreon's website. That's patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Trying to get a few more contests up because we have extras here. We have perks here. Stuff that's been sent to the show as review material that are could be used as good prizes. I'm not sure how to give them out via Patreon, though. So if you've got any ideas, let me know. But I also want to throw out a shout-out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for the musical interludes we have here on the show. They did an awesome job, and I will never stop singing their praises about it. We also interviewed them a few weeks back on their newest album, Hyperspaced. You can find out all sorts of information about that and more of their music over at their website, sci-fried.com. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.